In the podcast, the Gradient Podcast, we talk about
Hakuna Matata. It means no worries for the rest of your day. Or at least for the rest of the time you're listening to us. I'm Jaden.
I'm Armon.
And I'm Evan. And welcome to a very special episode of the Gradient Podcast.
Later in this episode, we have an exclusive interview with a special guest. But first, let's talk about schools and AP testing.
The rise of online schooling has led students into a new learning environment, one where conventional AP testing has morphed into a new online version.
Yes, in fact, College Board has announced that while some AP tests are canceled or altered, many of which have been shortened into a 40-minute version.
I definitely think that we're losing a lot of the standards that previous AP testing had, but to be fair, it's really what you have to do in a situation like this. I think it would be just wrong to have students complete AP testing in the conventional way in this circumstance. And
not only that, on top of that, having open note and online as a factor makes having multiple choice questions more easily to be cheated off of. And that's why I think that the DBQs or the essay questions are very more well suited in this situation.
Yeah, College Board definitely did a good job here. I think they really accommodate to students' needs more. That's something that you have to be supportive of.
Regardless of how well they were able to shift the test into having a test with everything going on, I don't think the scores of this year's test show a good representation of previous year's scores. Basically, what I mean from that is that if someone got a 5 in a previous year, I don't think they have a greater amount of skill and knowledge on the subject than someone who might get a 5 in this upcoming year.
I would say scores mean absolutely nothing this year. I mean, sure.
I wouldn't say absolutely nothing, okay, but I think it means a lot different than what it meant.
I think the level of intelligence and information that you gain from taking an AP class isn't measured in this new system per se, right? For some students, their exams are completely canceled, so they don't really get much out of that. But for other students where the exam curriculum is just completely shortened, you're not testing for the skills that the class is designed to teach. You're testing for a single section of that. And that's where I have a problem with the system. But again, I think it's still necessary.
But regardless, if someone gets a 1 and another person gets a 5, the person with a 5 still shows more knowledge on the subject, regardless if it's on a very morph scale than previously.
Sure, they still show more knowledge, but still, I don't think it shows that they have more knowledge.
Plus, you have to take into account the fact that College Board has stated themselves that it's open note, and students are allowed to use external resources either on paper or online in this new testing format. So while one year had to do it completely closed note based off of only memory, this year we have access to the entirety of the internet and all of our physical resources from class. It's going to be a very different experience for people taking the test this year than it was in past years.
But on top of that, while they are allowing internet and open book usage, they're also shifting the test where immediate answers cannot be found in those open notes and those internet resources, because everything you need to know is very much more like application usage rather than just general thought.
You really think that's going to stop people? Like, I don't condone cheating in any way. I don't think it's something you should do. If you do it, that's wrong. But I think as much as College Board tries to make the exam harder to cheat on, I think people are still definitely going to find a way to do it.
Oh, I completely agree. But I do think that making it in essay format will make it much more substantially difficult to cheat on than if it was multiple choice.
We are all in the AP seminar course. Do you think the changes to the grading rubric, that being that the presentation portion of the rubric has been completely nixed and it's only going to be off of the essay, do you think that was a smart way to handle the changes?
I think it's the best way to handle it, because that's already something we've prepared for the remainder of the year or the previous amounts of the year. But the only difference is now we just have to put more effort into it or stress it much more.
I think they definitely did. Go ahead.
We had already prepared for the presentation aspect. We already had team presentations. This is just an individual presentation. I don't think it would have been incredibly difficult to have to do an individual presentation over, say, a Zoom call or a Teams call. I think it would actually have been incredibly simple and easy to do. So I think that if with enough effort, they could have at least tried to adapt the presentation aspect of the AP seminar rubric into this new online learning that we have.
I think what they did with AP seminar, they did a great job, like cutting it down to where instead of focusing on the presentation format, all our presentation skills are derived from our papers, so that does make sense. But on a personal level, I am kind of upset that I don't get to do the presentation, because the presentation was an iconic part of AP seminar. It was more than just you learn how to write papers. You also learn how to present, and you kind of teach yourself how to do it in an engaging way, and that's definitely something that's going to be missed.
Yo, I love the pillars of knowledge we learn in AP seminar, especially what Jaden was saying about the presentation. It provides a whole new lens of how we can depict our knowledge in school and apply it elsewhere. And going back to Evan's thought, where he was talking about how he thinks that there should have been some way where individual presentation should have occurred online. Reluctantly, this didn't happen to our personal class, but what I don't think is good with that situation is because while if that occurred, then there would be a possibility where there'd be a class where half the students were able to be presenting in class. And then after schools had closed, another section of the class must have had to present it online. And I think the grading scale between that would be very morphed. And I think it's just best if we cut it entirely as College Board had done.
100%. I think, again, with all of this AP testing, just in general, it's College Board's responsibility to accommodate for their students. And they're not perfect. And the way they did things is definitely not perfect. But they did take a step in the right direction.
I'm a little lost on what, Armand, you were saying about half the classes. Can you elaborate on what you were saying? So I'm a little lost there.
Well, what I meant is that thankfully this didn't happen to our specific class, but there is a very hefty possibility where a certain class could have closed, or like the school could have closed midway through presentations, where half the class was able to present physically, while if individual presentations had remained, then the other half of the class may have had to present online.
I don't think, if half of the class had already presented, the other half probably wouldn't present, because the entire class, like the presentation part, wouldn't be scored.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. But if we applied Evan's ideal where he could, where he thinks that online presentations could have worked, then I think that would have been a major problem with it.
Overall, how would you rate your experience going into these AP testings this year?
I think it's a lot easier. And on top of that, while we're on the mention of College Board, I know we talked about no citations or quoting, but I think this is something very entertaining. College Board had posted on their Instagram different text slang that they could use about AP exams. First starters, IDC means I dig credit. WTF means want that 5. TMI means 30 minutes in advance. And TBH means test be happening.
that's kind of like weird ploy to relate to the kids. I'm just imagining like the Steve Buscemi 30 Rock meme where it's like, how do you do, fellow kids? Like, there's no point to that. I just think that's kind of silly. But I mean, I get the point they're coming from. You know, gotta connect to the young generation, the texters, the Gen Z.
They should have started a podcast. I think it's the best way to do it.
Especially with a fantastic Lion King intro, I think a College Board podcast would be absolutely.
They're doing it wrong.
They're doing it wrong if you don't include Lion King references somewhere in your podcast.
It's the only way to do it right.
And on top of these text message, what's the word I'm thinking of? Anyways, the most iconic one of those is Poggers, P-O-G-G-E-R-S, meaning plagiarized off Google, got exam score revoked, sis.
So apparently College Board's also a Twitch streamer. Can I get some pogs in the chat, please? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Honestly, I don't know what to say. Like, they may have started off well, but it really just took a turn for the worst.
I completely understand College Board's purpose of trying to make these text message acronyms more applicable to AP exams. It's kind of a way to excite, in some sort, students about taking AP tests. But I think they could have taken a much more...
I am not excited in any way.
I'm not excited either, and I don't think these text message acronyms helped. But I do respect the attempt.
I do not respect it in any way. Someone needs to tweet at College Board. Just stop it. Get some help.
Tell them that's not working. It's not working.
But I do understand College Board's dilemma where all this coronavirus makes testing a lot more difficult to have in the regular function. But essentially, I think they've been doing a stellar job into making these tests work at an online platform.
Some final words to all students taking AP exams this year. Good luck. We're all in this together. And remember, everything the light touches is our curriculum.
Na sabanya baba ti baba o.
City Following that interesting discussion and our strange addiction to the Lion King, we have a very special interview. Next up, we have the current Seat 2 Commissioner of Coral Springs, former principal of J.P. Terravella High School, and a puppy-approved commissioner. Mr. Sean Serra, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Evan.
Let's start off the conversation on graduation. For seniors all over the country, the possibility of an online graduation becomes more prevalent as the threat of COVID-19 grows exponentially.
Graduating high school is a major milestone in many kids' lives, and the coronavirus is changing the way we plan on doing it.
So, Mr. Serra, our first talking point today is, what are your thoughts on online graduation, and what milestones would you like the school board to hit for an online graduation to be memorable for all the high school seniors?
Yeah, Armand, thank you. Well, first, you know, we want to celebrate the class of 2020. They've worked really hard over the past 13 years to meet this major educational milestone. And this is a very important day in not only their life, but in their family's life. You have a lot of people supporting you along the way, and you have some good days and you have some challenging days. And you know that there are people in your corner. And once again, this is the culminating event of the first educational journey for many people. So we're not looking to take it away in any way, shape, or form. A lot of thought, time, effort, you know, input, conversations went into it. And, you know, obviously we would love to have a traditional commencement like we have in years past. We do have a contingency plan if the CDC, lifts the restrictions and, allows us to go in that direction. We do have some dates identified. But for the most part, we are moving forward with the virtual commencements. They will run from June 15th to June 28th. We have 44 schools that we've posted schedules, so every school has their own date and time. So that in Broward, we can really, take our hat off and really celebrate and salute the class of 2020, for basically a solid 2 weeks. This is going to be available on the internet. This is going to be on Beacon TV. So people that are in the Tri-County area, people across the country, the world will be able to tune in. And we know that the class of 2020 is disappointing. You know, as a former principal, you know, I know how much, you know, the seniors look forward to grab bash and prom and senior awards night and all their banquets that, you know, with clubs and athletics. And it breaks my heart, you know, with three kids of my own that have gone through the school system. And as a parent, I get it. I mean, you know, you want those events, but unfortunately, you know, coronavirus definitely has, shift us in a different direction, and we'll do the very best we can to make sure that these kids feel special, that they feel, you know, saluted, and they feel like, you know, they got their due, you know, respect when it comes to their accomplishment.
So, Mr. Sarah, if I may, I'd like to ask a question. If you were in the shoes of a senior in this time, what specifically would you like to have incorporated in your graduation to make this moment memorable?
Obviously, I would want my name called, you know, and I would want to be able to participate. So, you know, in Broward, we have like a live chat / interactive opportunity for the kids so that they can actually participate online, take pictures, and do some commenting that's appropriate. But, you know, I also want to make sure that I get that full experience. So as a senior, you know, if I had brothers or sisters before me, or you know, if I wanted to have that special memory, I would hope that the school district would put some type of pomp and circumstance together with a program that really recognizes and gives me a good memory of the hard work that I've, you know, worked, you know, over the last 13 years to accomplish.
Definitely for all seniors, we just can't take away the fact that how important graduation is as an accomplishment. And even though your seniors aren't going to have their traditional graduation, it still is something that deserves to be celebrated. And this is an opportunity to do it in a way that you want.
Well, it's not really the way I want. I mean, ideally, I'd love to have the traditional commencement, but you know, the big thing would be that we got to show our respect and our love and our appreciation for the kids that have been in our schools for, like I said, the past 13 years. And as faculty, staff, district employees, we have relationships with the students just like the students have with their friends. And this is a special day for all of us. So, you know, it's important for us to try to move mountains. Virtual commencements have never been done across the country. We've done all kinds of research, and there's never been a college or university that we could find that has ever tried one. So you know that you're in special circumstances when you have colleges and universities and school systems across the country doing it. You know, but you know, we also have to keep people safe. I mean, ideally, we would love to have everyone together. And, you know, when I field calls and talk to parents that are disappointed, I get it. Listen, I've been in their seat. I would want it for my kid, too. But then the other half of the county is saying, look, you know, I wouldn't go to the commencement even if you were having it until there's a vaccine. I need to make sure my family's safe. We have health conditions at home. My kids are very important to me. I don't want them, you know, at risk. So although we have half the, you know, the community wanting us to do something in person in a big way, the other half that probably wouldn't even participate if we hosted it. So, you know, it's a challenging times. We got to make sure that once again, we're putting everyone's health and safety first, and that we're, you know, doing what's important to all. You know, I would hate to, you know, have an assembly of, you know, a graduation, and then all of a sudden, you know, we had a little bit of an outbreak or someone got sick or brought it home and they lost a loved one. I mean, that's the last thing we want to do. And ultimately, we're going to be run by the CDC guidelines and restrictions anyway. So, you know, if there's an opportunity for us to get together, then the superintendent is 100% committed to doing that. We'll have to take a look at what that looks like. It may not be a traditional where there's an audience, but it might be something. But in the meantime, we're going to do the virtual commencement so that we can honor each class in the best way that we can.
I would like to ask, as a former public high school principal and a representative on the Florida Board of Education, Do you see the effects of this outbreak changing the future of public schools? And if so, how?
You know, Evan, that's a great question. I mean, we got a long road ahead of us. And this could change the landscape for traditional education in a huge way. And, you know, I'm 48 years old. You guys are much younger than me. But I think with all of us on this podcast, this could be the most defining event in all of our lives. And, you know, we were just talking about, you know, what does going back to school look like? We don't know. I mean, how are you going to transport kids to school? A lot of kids take public transportation. They take the bus or they take an actual public bus that's scheduled in their communities. And, you know, how many people can we put on a bus? How many kids can we safely put in a classroom? You know, what are we going to do when it comes to eating lunch, assembling in big crowds, like pep rallies or games or stuff like that? I mean, there's a lot to think out and really put a lot of time and effort into finding the very best way. And there are a lot of people that are part of that conversation now. You know, we are looking at what the summer could potentially look like, what the fall could look like. And, you know, I know a lot of parents want, you know, us to figure this out. The kids want us to figure this out. And we want to figure it out. And, you know, but once again, kind of going back to the safety and well-being of everyone, you know, what does that look like? But, you know, your question, Evan, is a really good one. You know, I don't have a crystal ball. I couldn't tell you what it's going to feel like. But, you know, I think there are some kids that miss school now. They have a deeper appreciation of what that experience was like when they had it. And then there are some that, you know, they like the online, you know, stay at home concept. So, you know, hopefully the kids will all come back and want to be a part of it. But, you know, big thing is there's just a lot of questions out there that we still have to resolve.
So quickly, one comment on this, where you were talking about how it might be a new normality where everything would be online. So previously I had interviewed one of my past teachers, and she brought upon the point that she hopes that upon returning to a physical classroom in an uncertain amount of time, she hopes that students would be more appreciative of having a teacher or like a physical person to guide them through this activity, because now that they've experienced going through an education system without this. What are your thoughts and how this would transpond in the future?
Yeah, I mean, just for me, I'm going to have a deeper appreciation getting around everyone. Yeah, for the kids, I mean, you know, I've talked to quite a few former students that are in college, and then I've talked to some that are in high school. And the one thing I hear that resonates with all of them is that, you know, they, despite that they would complain once in a while about going to school, they miss it. And they miss their teachers, they miss the support staff, but more importantly, they miss their friends. And, you know, there's nothing like learning in a group setting. I think that it challenges you, it pushes you. There are a lot of, you know, situations where you have to grow up and you have to learn from mistakes, but ultimately it makes you who you are moving forward. And I think that when you're in a traditional setting, there's a lot to say for that. You know, and also the big thing is that, you know, there's a lot of love and a lot of support that, you know, has been lost. And there are some kids that are going through some really, really difficult times being away from school. And we got to make sure that we're supporting them and trying to get them the help that they potentially may need at home, because they don't all, you know, unfortunately have the structure and maybe the foundation that some students have to enjoy, and the parents and guardians and so on. So they're kind of alone, they're feeling alone, and we need to make sure that, you know, they have their voice heard and the support that they need.
So with the federal government warning of this second wave of coronavirus later this year, what should students expect going into the 2020-2021 school year?
I think the big word is patience. You know, and be part of the solution and want to actively, you know, participate in having your voice heard. You know, I know that the superintendent has had some student forums where he's invited kids to participate. And, you know, there's nothing like shaping the opportunity to guide the decision-making and what your future holds. So, you know, that would be a big thing. Also, like I said, patience, because some kids want to go back to school now. Some enjoy being home, but for the most part, they're missing that environment, and you just gotta hang in there. There's a reason why we're doing this, you know, social distancing and being responsible and trying to stay at home when you can is playing a factor in us getting to some normalcy in the future. And once again, they just gotta, you know, keep their head on straight and want to be part of the solution, not the problem.
Do you think with this greater emphasis on online learning now, with social distancing, that there will be a bigger effort in improving and adapting online learning for more students?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely going to be incorporated. I'd be very, very shocked if we're not doing some virtual type engagement after hours with small group settings and maybe even some instruction, you know, support with, you know, teacher and student questions and answers. Meetings, and then also the thing with, you know, being able to get involved in extracurricular activities. I mean, we've seen a lot of good things come from Zoom and Microsoft Teams and some of the other vehicles out there to bring people together. And I think that it creates a lot of opportunity where in the past we all had to run around and drive around and get to places, and it takes time. And I think that we can maybe even work more efficiently in the future, not only as students, but also as faculty and staff. That's a really good question. And I hope that it transforms into a more well-rounded way of learning.
So from what I've noticed, if we go through the present instead of the future, many seniors right now, they feel very unempowered because of the situation. They don't have closure on the last few moments of high school. God forbid this happens again. What would your perfect scenario be?
Well, for the seniors, we got to find some way to close this thing out, because they were abruptly sent home in the middle of August. You know, we all were struggling on what this would look like and what we can do. And, you know, many of them really need some closure. You know, it's important, especially when you've been looking forward to high school and having your senior year activities, and they've all been taken away from you, to have some opportunity for them to, you know, connect and close this thing out. I just don't know when that would be or what that would look like. I'm not confident or even positive that it would be in a traditional graduation, because that's on a limited time and opportunity standpoint. But, you know, the schools, the principals and the support staff, they're trying to get creative and trying to think of ways to honor not only all the seniors, but every single one of the kids, because, you know, we're focusing a little bit on the seniors, but the freshmen through the juniors are just as important, and they've lost a lot in different ways as well. So we got to make sure that whatever we can bring to them in programming and memories, we need to work hard to do.
Mr. Sarah, we want to say thank you for coming on and expressing your thoughts. Especially we want to say thank you for continuing to just serve your community. We very much appreciate it. Gradient Podcast is more than happy to have you.
Well, thank you, Jane. I really enjoyed being on with all three of you, and I'm very proud of what you guys are doing. I mean, you know, blazing a trail, you know, getting the word out, educating your audience, and empowering other people to do something that's pretty cool is pretty innovating, and also something that I admire. When I was a kid, you guys are far surpassing anything I was doing. So Your futures are bright, and I'm super proud to be a part of this call today. And thanks for even extending the opportunity to join you. So you guys, you have a good Sunday evening. And once again, thanks for including me with your precious time away from your family.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks for watching this episode of the Gradient Podcast. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Gradient Podcast and on Twitter, also at Gradient Podcast. With that, the circle of life is complete. I'm Jaden.
I'm Arman.
And I'm Evan.
We're Gradient, signing off. Thanks for watching. Thank you.